Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this is going to be a fun one.
Yes, it is.
So, Katie, yeah. Next week's WIT Connect, your big event.
I'm excited for
it. I heard a rumor you are the voice.
I am.
Of WIT Connect.
I am the voice. Just the voice. It's good.
You're going to be in another room and you're just going to talk.
Yeah, like away from everyone.
The woman behind the curtain.
Yes, I'm fine
and
with that.
WIT, for those who don't know, is Women in Technology. It's a great organization here in town that really helps girls and women kind of get immersed into technology firms, and they there's a lot of mentoring, there's a lot of good stuff happening, but this is their premier event they do every year, and we're proud to be part of it.
Yeah, we are. Broadcasting live from there.
That's right. All right, so let's get started. The first guest today on Atlanta Business Radio, we got Lauren Schmerler, and he is with Bottom Line Management. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Lauren, can you tell us a little bit about Bottom Line Management? How are you serving folks?
Well, Bottom Line Management is a business brokerage firm. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank
you. That's an achievement just by itself. 30
exactly.
years of anything. Forget business.
Right. And we help sellers of businesses sell their businesses and buyers get out of corporate jobs and buy their businesses.
Oh, really? So you work both sides of the
That's
street
right.
there. Do you like one side better than the other?
Well, I'm not going to say I like one better, but the largest percentage is from sellers.
Oh, people selling?
Mm-hmm.
And do you help them kind of get ready to sell, or they come to you when they're ready, when they're already got their act together?
Well, what I wish is that they would speak to me 2 years before they want
to sell. 2 years? Oh, so even before, they may not
right.
even be on their radar yet.
That's but, right. But what they actually do is come to me 2 minutes
before.
Too late.
So is that true? That happens a lot?
Oh, constantly. So, and my job, my background also is business consulting.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing that part-time out of college and have done it for 47 years now. And what I do is I tell them that I can advise you and counsel you on how to get your business ready,
mm-hmm.
because if we're not ready, we'll never sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes very difficult message to deliver.
What, do they think they already have it figured out?
Sometimes they do, and sometimes they know they don't, but their pride gets in the way, and they just don't want to admit that they haven't done the things they needed to do.
And what's some of those things that are kind of rookie mistakes?
File tax returns.
Oh. Has that happened to a surprisingly large number of people? Don't file tax returns?
Oh, yes. Or late. Uh-huh. And when I say late, a year, 2 years late. But clean books and records are what buyers are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, the cosmetics of the business, what I call the curb appeal. And I define that when a buyer drives up to the business, what's the initial impression that they obtain looking at it?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they walk inside the business, what's the impression they have of the physical aspects of it? So for instance, if I'm representing a buyer, I say, look at the ceiling. And they say, why? Well, see if there's a stain. Well, what if there is? That might mean there's a leak. And if there's a leak, what else is wrong?
Right.
So I really try to use common sense
mm-hmm.
most of the time, helping the sellers and the buyers.
Now, so if you're working, let's take each side separately.
Mm-hmm.
So you're working with a person who is selling their business.
Right.
They, in the perfect world, they've come to you early. Right. And you're okay with early.
Sure.
Right.
Always.
You can't be too early with you. Right.
Right.
Just even to meet them, maybe like down the road, they're going to want to use your service. So you're okay to have conversations with people that are very early in this.
I agree.
Okay. So that's true. So now you're meeting with them and you go, what are some of the questions you want to know from them?
Well, I always want to know how they got into the particular business they're in. I want to understand their background and their motivation. And once I understand that, I then want to understand, what have you done to build the business to its current level. And then because buyers want to grow things that they buy, I say, how would you advise a buyer to grow the business once they buy it from you? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the short version of the
question. So the buyer of a business isn't necessarily buying what exists today. They're kind of buying a better future down the road.
Okay, it's a dichotomy. And what they are doing is buying an opportunity, but they want to pay for the past, not for the future, because they say, why should I pay you for what I'm going
to
create?
Right. But so they have to believe there is a future, or Absolutely. Else they're not going to buy a good present.
Right.
Right? So they have to believe there's a better future.
Right.
And so that's part of how you're helping them kind of position their business so that it presents that way.
Exactly. We call it an executive summary. Mm-hmm. And the executive summary consists of how did I start or buy the business? What have I done with it since that time? And what do I suggest a new owner do to take it to the next level?
So now in your 30 years of doing this, you said you started out as a consultant. Now that was just part of... In the course of doing consulting, some people bought and sold. And so you're like, hey, why don't I just go all in on this? Is that?
Well, actually, what happened was one of my business consulting clients changed careers. Mm-hmm. And he started visiting businesses, selling those water coolers. And as he was doing it, because he had the gift of gab, he would talk to the owners and find out some of them were burnt out
right.
and they wanted to sell. So he passed the leads along to me, and in the course of 11 months, he gave me 3 leads, and I sold them all. That's when I realized, hey, there's an opportunity here.
And now you have a way to prospect that's
exactly.
efficient. Just you can almost give away water coolers to companies.
Most of my business listings come from referrals or from former clients. For instance, I've got a listing right now where the gentleman had come to me twice in the past. We successfully sold those businesses. Now he's looking for the third one.
So do sometimes you sell somebody's business and they say, hey, help me find a new business for
yes,
me?
Yes, absolutely. But the truth of the matter, and I believe in total honesty, there are 2 things that I tell my clients. I will not lie to you, and I will not insult your intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes have to tell them what you have is not saleable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very difficult message to deliver.
Right.
Or the price that you expect for it is totally unrealistic. That's an equally difficult message to deliver. And then we have to see where we go with it. And the truth of the matter, 1 in 5 businesses sell. That's a very low statistic.
So what happens to the other 4?
Well, they keep it. And they basically either close it or they just run it.
Mm-hmm. So when you're working with them and having that difficult conversation about the value, because this is, I'm sure they put their blood, sweat, and tears into the business. And in their head, they think it's something. And you see lots of businesses and it's more of a, you don't have as much emotion in the situation as they do. So you can kind of give them a more rational, you have to manage their expectations, right?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head when you said emotional. Most business owners have started the business as opposed to buying it,
mm-hmm.
and they're very emotionally invested in it. They view it as a child, and the child has grown up through
right.
the different stages, and now it's ready to be free.
Right.
And they want to be very careful who they sell it to. I have learned something in 30 years, and I know this for a fact. No business owner will sell to an individual who they don't think will treat their employees properly or their clients properly or the reputation of the company
mm-hmm.
because they're proud and they want to know that the new owner will carry on the baton, so to speak.
Well, because legacy is important.
Absolutely.
Right. They're not. And maybe that's something that people don't understand that aren't in business. Business people, kind of, to me, they get a bad rap as these kind of greedy people that are only out for a buck. The business people I run into in here care, and they care about things like their employees, their clients, things like that. And they don't want to tarnish their legacy to make another dollar.
Right. I agree with that.
Now, when you're working with your clients, what is a typical business that you broker? Are they over $1 million, under $1 million, or does it matter?
Well, there's two categories. The one category is called Main Street. Main Street are the lower price businesses. I would say lower price, meaning under $1 million.
And that's in annual revenue?
Yes. Then you have the other category of those over $1 million, and that's called mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And you have a different client and a different perspective. There's much more hand-holding with the business owners under $1 million than the ones over, because they're more sophisticated.
Right.
And working with them, actually, from my point of view, is more pleasurable.
Working for the ones with over $1 million?
Over $1 million.
Are more pleasurable because it's more of a business transaction rather than selling my baby.
Right, exactly.
So that's where you focus your energy, or you work with everybody?
I would say I'm willing to do some things that other brokers are not. I have a big heart, and sometimes my heart leads my brain. And I actually have been known to take listings that every other broker in town has rejected because it's too small.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the smallest listing I ever took sold for $20,000. But yet, I've also sold listings $11 million.
Right.
So that's quite a span.
Exactly. And you got to probably attack each one of those a little differently, I would imagine. So now, can you give some tips for businesses that are getting ready to sell? What are some of the things they should, like, do's and don'ts?
Well, I have a checklist of quite a few items, but it starts with books and records.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned earlier tax returns.
Right.
Tax returns need to be current and filed. Other tax returns, such as sales tax returns, same thing. One of my transactions fell apart at closing because we got a phone call and the secretary walked into the lawyer and said, sales taxes have not been filed for 3 years. And when the buyer heard that, he stood up and walked out. And that was the end of the deal. But all that hard work up to that point was in vain.
Right.
So books and records are very important.
So those are table stakes. That you got to have clean books and records, and you got to pay your taxes. Those are must-haves. Those aren't kind of negotiable.
Another thing that I suggest to business owners that very few do is policies, procedures, controls, like an operations manual. Similar to what franchises provide. Again, it gives comfort to the buyer. Now, one of the subtle things that I recommend that most people don't think about, does a new buyer really want to review employees they've never had experience with? No.
Right.
So I tell the business owner, review all your employees, document it, provide that to the buyer, so that they know who's who, how good they are, who's
like
marginal.
Like a dossier of each employee.
Exactly.
So then they get a feel for the team that they're inheriting.
Right. Now, I will tell a new owner, be a sponge. That's my advice. Mm-hmm. And that's my consulting advice. And when I define it, I say, what that means is for the first 6 months, do nothing.
Just listen.
Just listen, watch, take notes, and then call a meeting of all the employees, and during that meeting, ask for everyone's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get those opinions, pay attention to them and try to make the changes intelligently based on what you've observed and what your employees have said to you.
Right. Now, now let's look at it from the idea of now I want to buy a business and you're going to help me kind of match make and find a business. You have to learn what I like, what I'm good at, things like that? Or some of the owners, absentee owners, where they just want to kind of buy something and set it and forget it?
I'm actually quite proud of the buyers that I've helped. The very first person who came to me was a gentleman who traveled extensively and he had twins. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm not seeing my kids grow up.
Right.
And I'm not going to their ball games.
Right.
And I don't want to do this anymore. So I said, okay, what's your interest? And in his case, it was technical, you know, technological. So we started looking. And we went through the process of looking at different types of businesses. And the thing that I remember most is he and I were outside in the rain looking at used kitchen equipment. And I said, wait a minute. You came to me telling me that you want a company that has technology
right.
associated. Why are we in the rain today looking at this used equipment? He said, oh, I've got a cousin in the restaurant business. I figure I could sell this to him. Well, he got over that quickly. And eventually we found him a business. And he today is a success story. He's got like 10 employees, very successful, mm-hmm. has seen his children grow up.
Right.
And he's a great reference for me when I look at other buyers as well.
So you're trying to match it's not only the business, but it's the lifestyle that the business affords.
Yes.
That's an important component, even though the business might make perfect sense logically. If it's going to make him go on the road again, then it wouldn't be a good fit.
That's right.
And is that a hard pill to swallow for some people? Because do they fall in love? Is the motion work that way too? They start falling in love with things?
One of the things that I tell the buyers, I said there's two types of mistakes you can make. You can fall in love with a business that you're not suited for, or you can pass over a business that we really should have had you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I cite the example of a gentleman I worked with who kept passing on businesses. And I said, look, if you don't accept that you can get 80%, I know you're looking for 100% of what you want, you could go indefinitely. And sure enough, 4 years later, he still had not found a business.
Still looking.
And what I try to do, because sometimes we find something very quickly, and they say, oh, if I found something this good, this fast, let's keep looking.
There must be something better.
Let's keep looking. It's like they can't be satisfied right. with what they've got. And I said, I have to rein you in. And I have to say, look, you're good. And you can make up that missing 20%. So buy it.
Right.
And they do.
Now, are they buying it because this is an investment for them, or this is now their livelihood? Like, what are some of the reasons that people buy?
Okay. They're buying it for livelihood first. But they also know that when they grow it, they'll have sweat equity that they'll be able to cash out at the end of the line. Sometimes they buy the real estate associated with it so that they don't have to pay rent, mm-hmm. and therefore they make more, but also that real estate appreciates. So they basically have a business that's growing and getting more valuable, and the real estate associated with it doing the same.
And so it's an investment and a livelihood
right.
for a lot of people. Now, for you, over the 30 years you've worked in the industry doing these buying and selling, you've also been a speaker and a author as well.
Yeah.
So you've been a busy guy.
I was told my early career was in the corporate world, and I found out that I was operating as if I was a consultant. So I said, well, then maybe I should
just be a consultant.
So I met with a gentleman who wrote a book, and it was How to Be a Successful Consultant. And he told me everything I should do. And some of the things...
It was that simple? Or just read a book? And
No. He said, what you've got to do is you've got to establish credentials and credibility. And you really should do some speaking, mm-hmm. and you really should do some writing. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So I started doing speaking by representing myself as a competent, capable speaker. And that's material for another show. But then I also leveraged it. Everybody's heard of Sam's Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I could do something meaningful for the members of Sam's Club. So I presented myself to the owners, and I said I'd like to write.
In the Walmart owners.
Yeah.
Like Sam's Club.
Yeah, the Sam's Club owners.
Right.
And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. You come out 4 times a year. I have a lot of case histories that I can present. So I used the case histories and basically had exposure to millions of people that I would not have had had I not been associated with them. That lasted 2 years. And then Bell South and Staples and a slew of other.
So you were going to very large organizations.
Speaking. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I also went to universities to do continuing education. Mm-hmm. And I would travel to a college and just in one day present business-related material, typically negotiating and cash management. Those were my two topics. And
but how were you booking all these things?
Well, I asked, so you just called. It's like Field of Dreams.
Is it that? I don't know if it's that simple. I could just call up Walmart and say, hey, I want to give a talk.
Well, I kept establishing my credibility by adding to my professional profile. Mm-hmm. And there's an irony here. My current wife, when I gave her my professional profile, she said, I will never read it. I said, why? Because I have no patience for it. So she's the only person who's never read it. All my other prospective clients read it.
But you were able to sell her work.
Yeah, on different criteria other than that.
So now you're at some point you wrote a book?
Did not ever write a book because I have no patience. But I wrote lots of articles.
Right. So you were doing articles rather than writing the book and those, speaking.
Exactly. And those articles have been published multiple times.
In trade magazines mostly? Or
trade-related internet websites, mm-hmm. those kinds of things.
Now, for you, do you have a sweet spot of industries that you work in, or is it just size of business?
I will do service, light manufacturing, retail.
Like when you say service, is that like an advertising agency, or is it accounting firm, a law firm? Like,
well,
how do you define
those
service?
Are very specialized. I could and would do those because I have experience in the legal background, mm-hmm. and I know enough to be dangerous.
But so when you say service, what are you referring to?
Any company that provides a service. It could be an alarm company. Mm-hmm. It could be an exterminating.
So it's a business to consumer.
Yeah.
So business to consumer is more of a specialty than business to business, or you do?
No, I do business to business as well. I do a lot of internet website businesses, mm-hmm. where they create a business, a lot of home-based businesses.
Really?
You'd be amazed at what you can do with a home-based business. In fact, I did a YouTube where I kind of amused myself and the people who saw it. I said, you know, you could do it in your pajamas. No one knows. And it goes 24/7. And that's quite a profitable, lucrative business. Right.
So you work with owners of internet home-based businesses?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Do you have an internet home-based business? Did any of this inspire you to do
this? I have what you call a virtual business. Uh-huh. I don't have brick and mortar. I don't pay rent.
So your whole brokerage is out of your house?
Yes, but I also have an office identity, mm-hmm. program. And what that means is my mail goes there,
right.
My phone calls go there, and when I meet with clients,
you can meet
there's
in
a conference room.
Right.
There.
So for you, 30 years, what's your, can you sell your business? Is that at the end of the rainbow? Is there going to be a buyer?
No.
Of bottom
truthfully,
line?
I told you, I never lie. No. I will not have anything to sell. I'll have something to reflect on and feel good about. But it's not a saleable commodity for me because I didn't build an organization. There are other brokerages that have 10, 12 people that work there.
Right.
But I didn't choose to do that.
And that was by choice.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what business owners have to understand. They have choices and you chose the path of, look, I'm going to ride this horse and then call it a day at the end.
I wanted low overhead, and that's exactly what I have.
Right. So so for you, how long are you going to keep doing this?
Well, my wife would have liked me to stop yesterday.
30 years, that's quite an accomplishment.
But when you love what you do, and it's your passion, you keep doing it.
And it's not work, is it?
It's not
what
work.
What would you
for
do?
Me.
Play golf?
It's
what
pleasure.
Do you do something else?
And, you know, I used to play golf, but I don't. Let me tell you what I did yesterday.
What'd you do?
And you talk about fun. For me, this was fun. 2 days ago, I had a meeting with a buyer who had looked at dozens of businesses, could not find anything that he was happy about.
Mm-hmm.
Then I introduced him to a business that was really quite a charming business. It was an architectural design business with a fabulous client list locally. And he and his partner loved the business, but they were overwhelmed with how much knowledge the owner had.
Right.
And how would they ever be able to operate it like the owner did?
Right.
So I called up the buyer on my way to physical therapy, which again is another story
right.
for another time. And I said, do I have your permission to write a letter of intent? Letter of intent is what buyers present to owners when they want to buy the business. And he said, sure, do it. And I said, this will be your rough draft. Okay. So I wrote it up as if I was buying my own listing.
Right.
And I said, do with it as you please. I said, but if you present this to my client, I know they will accept it and you can buy the business. And the key to it was the owner had to help this new buyer
right.
hire
the right.
an operations manager
right.
so that the burden wouldn't fall on the buyer alone
right.
and give 6 months transition. I think it'll work. I hope it'll work.
A creative solution.
Yeah.
And that's when you have relationships that and trust allows that to occur.
Right. I am known for thinking outside the box.
Right. Well, it sounds like it.
When I did public speaking, the first thing I did is I went to the whiteboard and I drew the 9 dots that are in the shape of a square.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who here can connect the 9 dots by putting the marker down and going in 4, you know, directions
right.
without taking it off the board? Now, very few people had ever seen it, but the way you solve that is by going outside the
line. Box, right?
Right. And I said, that's what we call thinking outside the
that's
box.
That's right. You demonstrated.
Right.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, maybe they have a business to buy, a business to sell, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Your website?
I'm quite accessible by phone, by email, by text. If they go to my website, they'll get quite a bit of information. If they want my 12-page professional profile, I'll
send
it to them. But a lot of times, I'll send articles.
Right.
What I did recently for SCORE, which is the Organization of Retired Executives,
right.
I put together 60 pages of articles.
Wow.
And I just said, hey.
Hey, go at it.
Go at it.
And the website, though, is botline, botline.com.
Exactly.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's quite an achievement, 30 years helping people kind of make their dreams come true. You should be very proud.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the invitation very much.